I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times. Until 2008, Pennsylvania was known for being one of the least transparent states in the country when it came to the public's access to government records. The Right to Know law, which is 5 years old, has given citizens more clout to get records from their government, from local and state boards and agencies. If that request is denied, the public, that's you, can appeal to the Pennsylvania Office of Open Records, headed up by my guest, Terry Mutchler. She's the first person to have this position appointed by then-Governor Ed Rendell. Her term expires next year. Senate Bill 444, introduced by Senate Majority Leader Dominic Pileggi, calls for revisions in the Right to Know law. There was a hearing this Monday, and Terry Mutchler had much to say. She joins us on Radio Times to talk about how this law is supposed to work, how it has evolved, and how it can be improved. And Terry Mutchler, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. It's my great pleasure.
I'm going to begin with some very basic nuts and bolts type questions. How does this law work? What does it say to citizens in Pennsylvania?
Citizens in Pennsylvania have a right to know what their government's doing. They have a right to the records to ensure that public officials aren't keeping secrets, that they're doing the right things. And so this law is established so that if a citizen wants to obtain a copy of a school district superintendent's contract or a police record of certain types or wants to get a contract of a state agency, all that's going to be available. And the way it works is that you would file a right to know request. The agency has 5 business days to respond to you, and they must respond in writing. And they have to tell you you're either going to get it, deny it, or give a 30-day extension. At the end of that time period, they either give the record or deny the record. And if they deny the record, they must cite the legal reason and tell them that they have a right to appeal to the Office of Open Records.
And that would be your office.
That is our office. And what we do then is the cases come in. We had 2,188 last year, 89% increase since when we opened our doors. We assign it to a lawyer. A lawyer takes a look and asks the parties for additional information, and then by law we're required to issue our final determination within 20 business days. That is binding on an agency. So if we say to City Council, you have to release these records, they are obligated to release those records. The only recourse they would have if they disagree is to go to court.
And this law really reversed what had been common procedure before, which was that if you were a citizen here in Pennsylvania and you wanted some public records, you had to prove that you were entitled to that.
Yes. It was one of the worst laws in the United States. It was ranked 49th. 50 was Illinois until recently.
Where you came from.
Yes. I'm slowly moving up the chain one at the time. The presumption in Pennsylvania was that the burden of proof was on the citizen. And if a citizen wanted a record, he or she had to prove why it was public. Now that's reversed, and it's kind of a 1-2 punch because it's now the burden is on the agency. And also, if the agency denies the record, in the past you would appeal to the agency. Now you appeal to an independent Office of Open Records that has binding authority, which is only one of 3 or 4 states in the United States that has that type of a setup.
Here's another very basic question. If someone wants records, do all these records exist? Are they online? Are they in big boxes somewhere filed away?
A lot of folks misunderstand the Office of Open Records. They think that we're the repository.
Exactly.
And that we have, and so what we explain in our trainings, over which we've done about 800 around the state, is you go to the agency first, and the agency has the records. An interesting point you raised there about records don't exist. When we first started doing this, we had many agencies that would respond, records don't exist. The Office of Open Records started to require an affidavit under the penalty of perjury, and hundreds of records that were once not in existence suddenly started to become in existence. And it was sort of at that point that I really knew kind of what I was in for and what the Office of Open Records, it was going to be an uphill climb in Pennsylvania.
But is there still pushback from some of these public agencies, these state agencies, about records?
There is pushback, yes. I have to say that it's gotten better in many quarters. I think that a lot of the resistance initially was fear. And also, candidly, you have 2 extremes with this law. You have citizens and members of the media who are often convinced that every public official is a criminal, but you also have public officials that don't like the public. And so it's these extremes that cause problems on all sides. Our mission at the Office of Open Records is to issue fair and just decisions, regardless of who asks for the records, but more importantly, regardless of who holds them. And that gets really tricky sometimes.
And how much independence do you have? If you make a determination, can that be appealed? Is there an appeals process?
Yes, there is an appeals process. And if you are asking for records of a local agency, say for your listeners, the City of Philadelphia, the police department, the mayor's office, city council, or you know the housing authority, things like that, you would appeal to the courts of common pleas.
Right.
If you're dealing with a state agency, you appeal to the Commonwealth Court. Our independence, we have been, under both administrations, we have been able to carve out independence. And it was in both instances, it was a big struggle. But we have never had any interference where someone in either administration has said, I don't like this decision, will you recalibrate it? And they've really both honored the independence in one regard. But, you know, in terms of policy, but we're still struggling for independence in terms of, you know, budgets and things like that. And Senate Bill 444 would actually name us as an independent agency, black letter law.
And I do want to pick up on that. But there are a number of fascinating cases. One that your office was involved in involved a 13-year-old girl, yes. Not around here, from another county. Mm-hmm. And she was asking for records. What was she asking for?
She belonged to some type of a dance after-school program, and it was run by an educator or, you know, the person in charge happened to be in the Chambersburg Area School District. That's where it stemmed from. She happened to be a student at Susquehanna, High School, or middle school, I guess, and she filed a right-to-know request after this program had been dismantled and this person had been let go. And she filed the right-to-know request, and she got an extreme reaction from the school district. They, in essence, when you read their legal response, it's trite to say, but it could have been a teaching moment where they could have, you know, kind of worked with her and demonstrated the, you know, how government works and all of that. But instead, they took a heavy hand, and they threatened to charge her with to assess her with legal fees, and it was a really heavy-handed approach. At the end of the day, she did a terrific job of filing the right-to-know request. Of actually, it's hard to get in our doors, and so she did it step by step, and she won, and so you know it was a really framed example of how the law should work, that anybody can use it. But on the more negative side, it also demonstrated oftentimes how agencies forget that we are here to serve the public, and that in essence this 13-year-old was their boss, if you will, and that got lost along the way.
And they're here to serve the public. I mean, your office is,
yes.
but so is the school board,
yes.
for instance. An interesting happy ending. It has been, though, 5 years, and now there is talk about revisiting the right-to-know law. Do you think it needs some tweaks, some changes, having, in a sense, been in charge of its operation?
I do, and I have to say that Senator Pileggi, the majority leader, is an incredible open government advocate, and there was a discussion about changing the law shortly after it was enacted, and I asked him to sort of let us kick the tires for a little bit and see, see what this really was before we went and made changes. He has been a leader; there's no doubt about it, and it's because of him that, quite candidly, the Office of Open Records has been able to maintain its independence. And I can't say enough about his support. We've asked him to; he came to us and said, "You know what? You guys are in the front lines. What do you think?" And we gave him a list of proposed changes. Many are procedural. We had some other suggested changes, and virtually all of those were adopted. Mm-hmm. There's a few components of the law that we disagree with that kind of came after that, and we, we're working with him. But I have every belief and hope and support of Senator Pileggi, because he really is he's in many ways more open government than I am.
Well, that's interesting. But let me go back to something and it got a fair amount of press here in Philadelphia, I'm sure across the state as well, something referred to as
test. This is a statewide required monthly test of the emergency alert system, originating from the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency, Harrisburg. This is only a test.
And upon further reflection for myself, I thought this is really too broad. And what would happen, in my belief, is that we would not be able, the way it's written, the Office of Open Records would not be able to speak about cases until they're completely through the legal process. I believe that an Office of Open Records has to have a lifeline to the citizenry. And also, you can see case after case. I wouldn't have been able to talk to you about the 13-year-old case or some of the other cases that I'm sure we'll talk about today. And I think it's antithetical to have an Office of Open Government that has a speaking restriction. However, you know, I've been told, well, maybe I'm over-lawyering, and I'm sensitive to that. You know, I think, well, maybe I am. And we had our legal staff look at what other states do. There's no other state of a similar situation that has that restriction. More to the point, there's no other state agency. If the Department of Environmental Protection issues an order about cleanup, they get to talk about it. If the Attorney General's office issues an indictment, they get to speak. She gets to speak about it. And I think that while I have no concerns that we would speak inappropriately, but I think what would happen is if we spoke at all, you know, our law licenses might be at risk.
But do you feel, I mean, it sounds like you believe you have a good relationship with Senator Pelleggi. I mean, do you feel like
I have a superior relationship with him.
This is an issue you can negotiate with him and find some kind of, if not common ground, some kind of agreement?
I do. And the truth is, I kind of, you know, in some ways, he kind of got blindsided because he did come to us initially. But you know, and I, it was my error for not saying, let me take a look at the legislation, but it seemed to be limited to the pending. But now, you know, in looking at it and looking at it with my staff, I think it would harm not only the office, but one of the things that both administrations initially have asked us to do is not interact with the citizenry, because inevitably what happens is a citizen will call and they'll say, hey, I've got a case against this, you know, or can I get records of the school district or the police department? Then they'll go back to them and say, well, Terry Mutchler at the office said this, and it's not the exact advice. And so, but I believe that we're a unique animal and we really need to have citizen contact. That's what we're all about. Not inappropriate, of course, but I have every hope that we will come to a good resolution on that.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Terry Mutchler, our guest today on Radio Times, the first and current executive director of Pennsylvania's Office of Open Records. She was appointed by Governor Ed Rendell back in 2008 to serve a six-year term. She's a former investigative journalist with the Associated Press. She also served as Illinois' first public access counselor. She's an attorney, and we're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Any questions or comments, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. PAFA Continuing Education offers art classes for all ages and levels of experience this summer, including landscape, watercolor, portrait painting, and more. Featuring pre-college drawing and painting for high school students, the Summer Academy for teachers, and weekend master classes with renowned artists, including Stuart Shills and classical realist Juliet Aristides. Classes begin May 28th. Details online at pafa.edu/ce. You decide the winners at WHYY's second annual Best of the Chefs, June 20th at WHYY in Philadelphia. Food fanatics will love this two-hour tasting, featuring an array of mouth-watering munchies served up by local restaurants and businesses, all competing to be named 2013's Best of the Chefs, with summer beer garden, specialty cocktails, and live music. WHYY's second annual Best of the Chefs. Tickets at whyy.org/events.
Ariel Castro is accused of holding three women captive for a decade in Cleveland, but his family is adamant that his actions have nothing to do with them.
We don't have Munster in our blood.
We talk with family members connected to other notorious past crimes about how they learned to live with it. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. 5 years ago, before 2008, if you were a Pennsylvania citizen and you wanted to get records from your local government or a school board or a state agency, you had to prove that you were entitled to that information. That changed with the state's Right to Know law that turned the burden of proof on its head. And again, Terry Mutchler is our guest today on Radio Times, the current executive director of the Pennsylvania Office of Open Records. We've been talking about how the system works, how it's supposed to work, how it has evolved, and we're getting her opinion about how to improve the process, including Senate Bill 444. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. There's another part of this Senate Bill 444, I guess a kind of an escape clause for agencies that feel as if they have had too many requests, they are just burdened by requests, that they could actually circumvent someone's access to your office. How would that work, and what's your response to that?
I'm actually more concerned about this than the what's been dubbed the Mutchler Amendment. And
that's the gag order.
The
right?
gag order, right. And I'm very concerned about this because, first, let me say that I do believe that there are agencies who are inundated, and I think townships suffer a great deal under this law in some ways. But what this clause in the – or what this provision in the law would say is if you feel that – if the agency believes that the request is unduly burdensome, they can skip the administrative process, go straight to court, and get a certification of some sort that says this is unduly burdensome. I can say in my 5 years' experience that we get calls from agencies that say we're inundated, and we'll say to them, well, how many requests? Well, we had three this month. I'm very deeply concerned about this because I believe two things. I believe you're going to get the local agencies who see this as an escape hatch, to use your language. But I also believe that I think you're going to see, more dangerously, the higher echelons of government skipping the Office of Open Records to go to court and not having any type of an independent review in that regard. And we get many requests from state agent related to state agencies, the governor's office, you know, across the board, and I am concerned.
And willing to sort of fight for this one? I mean,
this one very much so, but I want to also say where it stemmed from. It's not an anti-government, open government approach by Senator Pileggi. It is an attempt to really resolve an issue that does exist. What you have is you have many times commercial requesters, some from out of state. They'll come in, they file a heavy-duty right-to-know request, sort of the taxpayer of Pennsylvania is paying for that, then they turn around and sell the information. And so it's called a commercial use. And also, we have, for anybody that thinks that citizens don't use this law to harass public officials, come sit at my desk for a while. We had a case right outside of Philadelphia where a requester filed 300 requests in a three-month period.
Wow.
And no agency can handle that. And then what you find out when you dig a little deeper, the fellow lost an election and he's not happy. And so, you have those extremes. But we try to encourage agencies to forget who's asking, stay focused on the record, and try to work at it from that angle.
I know that your office, about 30% of the appeals to your office come from prisoners,
yes.
People in prison.
Of the 2,188 cases last year, 31% came from inmates. Many of those relate to their own cases. They want sentencing orders, things like that. A lot of them are frivolous in the sense that we've had one in which the inmate wanted to know the difference in the quality of underwear issued to prison guards as opposed to inmates. You see a lot of those types of things. There have been a few where inmates want policies of the institution, and those are important.
Right, but obviously, someone that's asking about underwear. What does your office do with that?
We process it. If they've asked the Department of Corrections about, let me say up front, hats off to them because they once responded to a right to know request that was virtually written on a napkin. I wouldn't even have done that. And they are inundated. They're the largest number of requests that anyone receives. They do a terrific job. When that denial came to us, we processed it as we do. We take our own advice. Doesn't matter who asks. Doesn't matter who holds the records. But we've come up with a system where there would be a separate system for inmates. Other states use it successfully. And it's in this legislation, and I think it's worth a look.
Because of the sort of uniqueness of their requests,
yes.
and the position,
yes.
that they're in.
Yes.
I know that state-related universities, which would include Penn State, they're actually exempt from the open records law in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Is it time to revisit that?
Well, I have to say a couple of things. In the 5 years that I've been here, the highest number of inquiries by the public, the press, and lawmakers came surrounding the Jerry Sandusky Penn State scandal.
No surprise.
Right. And also, people were very irate to learn that, even lawmakers, that Pennsylvania was not, Penn State and the other state relateds were not covered under this law in that way. Pennsylvania is one of three states in which their universities are not covered. However, that's going to be a decision for the legislature to make. What we have said and will continue to say is anytime you have tax dollars, there needs to be a level of transparency. There's three types of solutions that are floating around the legislature. One is to cover them outright. Mm-hmm. One is to cover them just for the money that they receive in state dollars. And the third is reflected in Senate Bill 444, which would cover police departments. I think of the universities. I do think it's critical to state the fact that we could have had the strongest law in the United States of America, and it would not have stopped Jerry Sandusky from what occurred there. It may have tipped us off earlier, but for folks that are trying to, you know, rewrite that terrible, dark history, it's not going to happen, no matter how strong you make the right-to-know law.
But just underscore, if we're talking about state-related universities, in the case of Penn State, I think they get, what, $500 million
they
or
get,
something?
Their endowment is $4.4 billion, and they get $379 million in state dollars. So
every year.
Every year. Or, you know, it varies from year to year. Right. And this year it was level funding by the governor. And so it's certainly something that, believe me, lawmakers are really, this is right on the forefront of their radar screen, and we'll see what happens.
Let me just reintroduce you. I do want to get some callers in on our conversation. I do want to talk about charter schools as well. And again, our guest is Terry Mutchler. She's the first and current executive director of the Pennsylvania Office of Open Records. This office developed out of the Right to Know law that was passed about 5 years ago. And we're talking about what her job entails, what folks here in Pennsylvania are entitled to when it comes to public records, and how the system can be improved. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Judy from Unionville to join us. Judy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call,
sure.
Terry. My question to you, or to Ms. Mutchler, is I am a real estate appraiser here in Pennsylvania. They have meetings in Harrisburg once a month, and it's too far away for me to go, and I requested a copy of their monthly meetings. They told me that I would have to buy them, and they gave me a it's a legal group, apparently, that takes the minutes. The fee for the January 2013 meetings would cost me $61. I responded back to them, and I asked them where I could go for a public viewing to view them, because they are supposed to be, right, you know, public. And they told me I'd have to go to their Harrisburg office. So what do I do about that? Or
I just want to be sure.
Am I not entitled?
Yeah,
well,
ahead.
Thank you very much,
sure,
for your call. And I just want to be sure I understand one detail. You're asking for minutes of a public agency or a private organization?
It's the Real Estate Commission, so that would
be that's public.
Sure.
Yes. And the way it works under this law is the law gives citizens two options. When you ask for minutes of a meeting, they are public record. We encourage agencies to put as much on the website as they can to avoid this very situation. However, a requester has two options. They can ask for copies of the records, and they can be charged 25 cents per page, standard size copy. There can be no labor fees. There can be no additional redaction fees, nothing like that, and we set those. Or alternatively, the law says that you have the right to view the record. And viewing the record, you would have to come to their to their main location, or if they have a remote location, like satellite offices, you would be able to also go there. However, I don't know how many pages the minutes would be. $61 seems, if you calculate it at a quarter a page and it works out, they are permitted to charge that. However, what I would hope in situations like this is we encourage agencies, it's a lot easier than going through the right to know process to just sort of pop in the minutes and ship them out. Or put them online. And we encourage agencies all the time. This is not anecdotal. The more public records you have on a website, the less right-to-know requests that you get. And so what I would recommend to this caller is, and all callers, pick up the phone first and call the agency, just as this listener did. If that doesn't work out for you, then file a right-to-know request. It's a simple form. It's on our website. you file it with them, you say, I want the minutes of this meeting, and then you go through the process, and they have 5 days to respond to you in writing. And you'll minutes are public. You will eventually get them. It's just a matter of what you're going to have to go through to get them.
And be aware that you could pay for the 25 cents per page.
Yes.
Judy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Chris from Ballykinwood has to say. Chris, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I wanted to say, you know, I hear that Pennsylvania seems to have a reputation for being difficult, but my hobby is genealogy, and I went right away to the agency in Newcastle, I guess it is, for records in the archives, which were open, and I had a very, very good experience along the way doing that, but I did have difficulty from Texas trying to get records for a closed adoption from 1920, and it came down to a county judge who for years was refusing my petition. When he stepped down and another judge came in, suddenly that judge was agreeable and everything opened up. So it came down to sort of an individual, it seemed, an individual interpretation of the law. So I just wanted to say that, you know, I don't think Pennsylvania is all that bad.
Okay. Listen,
nice to know, Chris. No, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Terry.
You know, I thank you for that. And I do hope that folks hear that we have one of the strongest laws now in the United States, and we're continuing to improve it. He raised an incredibly important point. One of the top three requests that come to the Office of Open Records relate to adoption records. Adoption records are not available under the Right to Know law, and a lot of people have that misunderstanding. Some states permit a limited release of medical records. I know Illinois has done that, in adoption cases. But adoption cases, Bureau of Vital Statistics, death records, you know, birth records, they're off limits under this law.
Thanks, Chris, for the call to Radio Times. And you can call as well. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Well, we were talking about some of these state-related universities. What about charter schools? Are they covered by the Right to Know law?
Charter schools are covered by the Right to Know law. And as I've said at the Senate hearing on Monday, I used to be much more polite about this, but I think I'm not anymore. They are the number one violator of the Right to Know law in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We just pulled these statistics. Of the cases that come to the Office of Open Records of the appeals that deal with charter schools, 87%, in 87% of the cases, the charter school ignored the citizen and ignored us. And so I know that the Charter School Association has said that it's the first they've heard of it, but we reached out to them in 2010, and I dispatched our chief counsel to go train them and talk with them about this problem. We also wrote them a letter in 2012 expressing the exact same concerns we raised at the Senate hearing. The committee seemed very interested in that, and our goal is, I say this not to, harm them in any way. I say it so that we can reach a solution so that citizens can get records related to these schools that are covered under the law.
And they're covered because they use public funds.
They're covered because they are defined as an agency under the law. It's not always linked to money, but they are covered. And, 87% of ignoring a state agency and a citizen is something we need to address.
Well, let me quote you. You said, and this is about the charter schools, they don't feel they should be subject to this law and candidly subject to you. This is what you were saying to the senators. Then you said they are a cancer on the otherwise healthy Right to Know law. You stand by those words?
I do. And although I have to say that, you know, what I regret about that, if there is a regret, it is accurate. However, I probably could have used a different analogy in that regard.
But does that express your frustration?
It absolutely does. And what's ironic is when we wrote them the letter to see if we could reach a mutual solution, they ignored us. And so what my concern there is not us. My concern is you can't think of, in my opinion, there's not a more important agency that's covered than a school. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if we're dealing with kids and our kids and kind of what the policies are and what the finances are, you know, what would it take to get them to listen? And, you know.
But if they are ignoring your office, I mean, you can't call up the police to come in.
Well, we have a couple. What we could do is the Office of Open Records always has the ability to go into court and say, we're going to file something called a mandamus action and say to the court, we really, really meant what we said. Could you back us up? But the reality is with 2,188 cases, 200 cases in the courts, over 40,000 email inquiries and telephone inquiries and a staff of 7 lawyers, there's no way I could dispatch them to 67 different counties to get this resolved, which is a funding issue. Our hope, and my great hope, is that, well, now it's sort of out of my hands because every senator on that committee has asked us for those statistics, and I think that they are going to take note of this and take action. My hope is that we can kind of get them into the fold, so to speak, and get them responding to citizens.
And what did people want to know? And if they were requesting information from charter schools, what were they looking for?
They were looking for a lot of different things. They were looking for construction contracts. They were looking for, you know, how much is the head of the school being paid? Looking for, one was very scary, I thought. They were asking for a list of students and their home addresses, okay?
Oh.
And when what happened was when the agency ignored them, it gave the requester an automatic right to appeal to us. Now, because the agency didn't assert any exemptions or say why they couldn't get these, which they wouldn't have been released, it put us in the position, the Office of Open Records, we cannot assert an exemption, nor should we, for an agency. But here we had this situation. What legally we should have done is granted release. But how are we going to sit there and grant release of home addresses of students? I'm not going to do it. And so we were able to incite a law called FERPA. It's an educational act, and stop that and say, you know what, go to court if you want to really get this. And it kind of gave us sort of a back door. But
well, just and to pick up on that, so that our listeners know, so you don't, your office doesn't take a position on a request. The idea is that if an individual in Pennsylvania wants a public record, they at least have the right to request it and get
some
kind of response.
And what you have is you have a right to request the record. And what we, there's this great athletic coach, his name's Greg Resnick, and he always tells his athletes, be on time and own the details. And it's what I want to tell the agencies. You know, respond timely and own the details of, if they're not entitled to a record, then, you know, say legally why they're not, and then the process comes to us. And even if a record is denied, the citizen knows that they have had a hearing, that they've, you know, in the lowercase h there, and that they've had someone review this. There's many times that records, we've had someone ask for the blueprints to Three Mile Island. I mean, you know, we had someone, this is really an extreme case, but someone asked for the public records related to a school teacher, salary and whatnot. The school district ignored him. He came to us and he attached a copy of his protection from abuse order that was expired. And he said, you see, I'm no longer a threat. I want these records. And so there are a lot of folks that, that you know, and the Commonwealth Court has rightly raised the big red flag about third-party records, just like I explained there, and the Commonwealth Court has that right on the forefront of their radar screen. There's a lot of issues with it.
She's responding to the music. We are taking a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation with Terry Mutchler. She's the executive director of the Pennsylvania Office of Open Records, the first executive director of that office, and we're talking about her job and your rights as a citizen to get access to public information. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro proudly supports WHYY. The University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro offers a dedicated senior care unit in the emergency department and a unit designed to meet the needs of elderly patients who are hospitalized. It is staffed by a clinical team that specializes in caring for older patients. You can learn more about their approach to senior care at PrincetonHCS.org or at 1-888-742-7496.
On the next Fresh Air, why retirement security has for many people become retirement insecurity. We talk with Robert Hilton Smith about the hidden fees that come with 401ks and why young people are likely to retire with less than baby boomers. Hilton Smith is a policy analyst with the public policy organization Demos. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. President Obama gives the commencement speech at the all-male, all-black Morehouse College this weekend. Another speaker is making the claim the president has too few African-Americans in his administration. Also, how prisons are becoming de facto psychiatric wards. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Pennsylvania had long been considered one of the least transparent states in the country until 2008, when lawmakers rewrote the Commonwealth's Open Records Law. The Right to Know Law mandated the creation of an independent Office of Open Records. And again, Terry Mutchler, our guest, is the executive director of that office. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-9499. WHYY. Let me get that. Looks like Betty from Wayne to join us. And Betty, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Okay. I belong to an organization that works to prevent wildlife vehicle collisions. And Pennsylvania is the first in the nation for deer vehicle collisions. So we contacted the Department of Transportation and asked for contact information for people that have the wildlife license plate, hoping that they'd be most receptive to what we were trying to get across, which is, you know, deer usually cross the road between dusk and dawn, and to scan both sides of the road as you drive so you can see them approaching the road. And the department told us that that information was private and wasn't available, and I just wondered if that was true.
Betty, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Interesting.
It is a very interesting question, and the reality is a lot of folks, if I understood the question, she was asking for the folks that have the wildlife license plate. That even if PennDOT wanted to, a federal law would preclude release of that, and you would not be entitled to that information. You're not going to get driver's license information, things like that, or the license plate registry. You don't even get the in many instances the ATV registries. We've had a lot of folks that want that as well. So without seeing all the details, it sounds like PennDOT was spot on.
Right. Because the idea is this would give Betty and her organization access to individuals' license plate number, right?
As opposed to
the DOT information.
And that's exactly right. And while Betty certainly, you know, it sounds like it's a good cause and all of those things, there's a lot of folks out there, believe me, that have less than honorable intentions. Mm-hmm.
And that we must be protected from people like that. Betty, thanks for the call. Let me see what Ann has to say. Ann, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
I would like to know if you've had any experience with fracking questions and whether the federal law called the Halliburton loophole, where companies don't have to disclose the chemicals they're using, also applies in the Pennsylvania law, or whether... And they're being protected by the Pennsylvania administration. And I'd like to know whether the open records law covers that.
And we got a visceral response from Terry to your question.
Go ahead, Terry. I just want to say two preceding things. One, your callers are incredibly informed, and I really appreciate the sophisticated questions that they're throwing out. Let me also point out that if Senate Bill 444 were passed, I would not be able to answer this question because we have pending cases related to this.
And that's the gag part of this bill.
Yes. And so, but since we're not under that, I can say a few things. We get a lot of requests. The very first actually came from the New York Times under the previous administration that was seeking information about Marcellus Shale and the fracking. We've had cases in which folks want to know what is in the process, what type of chemicals are used. And in those instances, the department has wide leeway to withhold them under the current legislation. There is legislation pending in Harrisburg that would say we get to know what's in the chemicals that are being used in the fracking. But it's one of the hottest topics.
Sure.
We see it around the state, and by and large, you're getting less. More information is restricted than is given.
And is that because of state law, or is it because of the federal law as well, which goes back to the Bush administration?
It's a combination, and I have to confess I'm not as familiar with the federal law, but under the state law there's a lot of room under pre-deliberative, under investigative materials, and a lot of agencies would consider, they think of non-criminal investigations and kind of the material studies are exempt under this law. And that's – Common Cause does a great job of trying to bring that to the fore, but I encourage people to keep trying because there are many times that agencies do release some information.
And you get a lot of media requests?
We get more citizen requests than media requests. Uh-huh. And on this issue, as well as all others. Most people think that the media drives this law. The reality is that over 80% of the requests that come to the Office of Open Records are from citizens. It's a citizen-driven law. However, on the fracking, the media was there early, but now citizens have sort of there's more citizens requesting than members of the media.
And have you seen requests increase year by year in the
Absolutely.
5 years that you've headed
yes.
up this office?
Yeah.
And how many last year, for instance?
Well, in 2012, we had 2,188 appeals. The year before that, we had 1,772. I wanted to get to 1776, but it didn't happen. but compare that to when we opened our doors. In 2009, we had 1,059 requests. It was an 89% increase, and that's just one component of our work.
Governor Corbett's office for a long time had refused to release information about his schedule. This was requested by journalists. How did your office get involved in this case?
Well, the Office of Open Records, the appeal came to the Office of Open Records when the Associated Press reporter filed the Right to Know request with the governor's office early on. The governor's office denied the request for his calendar. It was an unusual legal denial. Most governors and most folks, the mayor, in fact, had a case related to this as well.
Mayor Nutter?
Yes. They argue, you know, a security issue, and many times that's absolutely accurate. This took the unique approach of arguing a pre-deliberative, in other words, that the calendar isn't really a done deal until the meetings actually happen, so to speak. They took us to court on that, and the courts have just ruled now, regarding this. And to the governor's office's credit, they have chosen not to appeal that. And I think that is, for the Office of Open Records, that's a seminal moment, because we have, at the beginning, we had a very rocky road with the governor's office. There's new players in place with the Right to Know law, and I can't say enough about Delene Lance Johnson, who's spearheading this, and there has, for the governor, and we've had a complete, everybody's playing nice in the sandbox. So it's really, that's good news for citizens. And so I believe that the rubber really hit the road there, because when the governor then chose not to go forward, I believe, and appeal it, I believe that was a very strong signal of a new day for the Office of Open Records and the governor's office, and I'm quite happy about that.
I was reading some articles of a couple of years ago when Ed Rendell was the governor of Pennsylvania, and there were some rocky times with your office as well, I have to say.
Yeah, there was, and what I can say after all of that is that Governor Rendell could not be he is equally as pro open government as I am. I don't think that memo made it down to his lawyers, and I think that was a lot of the issue. Governor Rendell gave me some of the best advice I've ever gotten, and he said to me, you know what your problem is, Terry? He said, you want to be liked, and you can't be an open records chief and be liked. And that has really reduced a lot of the blood pressure medicine and the stress, and I can't say enough. I mean, when I brought those issues to his attention that were blocked by his lawyers, and I couldn't get to him, but once it came to his attention, mm-hmm. It was a whole new day, and I consider him a friend, and I consider his work to be very pro-open government.
You came to Pennsylvania from Illinois, where you had a similar job. Yeah. How different Illinois from Pennsylvania?
Well, in terms of corruption, it seems not much, but what's interesting is when the legislature in Illinois failed to adopt a new Right to Know law, even though they had the 50th worst in the United States, the Attorney General decided that she was just going to take this on her own, and she created the Office of Public Access Counselor within her office. The beauty of that was we didn't really have a lot of law to go on, so we were doing this sort of on a vision, which, you know, is a really cool way to do it in some ways. They've now rewritten their law, and we're just listed as in the top five. Hmm. It's similar work, and what I find around the United States is the same dynamic. The first questions agencies ask are, why do you want it, which you can't do under this law. And so you have that, and you have, you have that dynamic of, you know, kind of cats and dogs there. And I still can't figure out what that is, because citizens own this government, and they are entitled to the, you know, could you imagine Marty going to the bank and saying, I want to take $100 out, and they say, for what? You know, I mean, it's your records, you know, so
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY, talking about open records here in the state of Pennsylvania. We have Tom, and Tom calling us from Philadelphia. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi. I'd like to make a comment that currently the Philadelphia Sheriff's Office uses the right to know as a way of being secret. When a property sells at a tax sale or a mortgage foreclosure sale and there are excess funds created after all the liens are paid off, the sheriff is required in all 67 counties to order a distribution policy. And that policy is from a guarantee company, and it will say, well, there's $10,000 and this is who it should go to. It doesn't automatically go to the owner if there was a mortgage. That policy is to be on record at the sheriff's office for viewing in the office. Recently, there's a fellow named Vignola. He is the open records officer there, and he forces the public to file what's called a right-to-know request at the city solicitor's office. The city solicitor's office then works with him to get the policy. If he decides to release it, he does. If he decides that we're not, their response for not giving a policy or not letting you view your own policy is they believe that if a policy is not available, then one does not have to be produced. And well, it's just a way to keep secrecy going.
Well, Tom, let me take your story, your anecdote, and get a response from our guest.
Well, there's a lot packed into that.
There is
and
a lot
so,
packed into that.
And it's a good question. And so a couple of things. Sheriff's office is a public office. It is subject to the right-to-know law. The law requires that they have a right-to-know officer, and the right-to-know officer must respond for that agency. So the first question I would have, and we'd have to look into it,
right,
is whether it's appropriate to pass it off in that way. Second thing is policies are public record as a general rule. However, I can't distinguish if the caller is saying, you know, an individual policy or the overall policy. The overall policy would be subject. What I would recommend in this scenario, as we would to all requesters, is file a written right to know request. If you get a denial, appeal that to the Office of Open Records, and we will examine all the components of that to order release. The kind of one of the weird things about this law is there is a little bifurcation in that if there's a criminal investigative record that is related to state police, that comes to us on appeal. However, if it's a local agency's criminal investigative record, it does go to the DA for appeal. We're trying to get that kind of unified one way or the other in the law. But policies are public record. Agencies are required by law to have a right-to-know officer. Their agency would be required to respond, whether they get input from the solicitors and other, you know, it's appropriate. It's not inappropriate. But the agency itself must respond, or it's a deemed denial. And that means the agency has ignored you, in essence, and you can come to our office.
And they have to respond in 5 days. Is that right?
They have to
right?
respond in five business days. They have to do it in writing. Most agencies take a 30-day extension because of, you know, there's reasons that they get to do that. But at the end of the day, they have to pony up. It's either public or not, and they have to tell you why. And as to the production part, that's very important. This law says that if a record does not exist, they are not required to create one. So if you were to ask the Philadelphia Police Department for, say, a traffic study at 5th and Main, say they don't have that. They're not required to go do one for you. However, where it gets tricky is, what if there is a law, as he seems to allude to, that says you must have this? That is outside of our purview, and we've had those instances, and we've gone to the district attorneys to say, we had this case. The law says they're required to have it. It's not us. Here it is for you guys. And that does happen a lot.
Tom, good luck, and thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me get Peter from Upper Darby to join us. And Peter, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I heard last week that New Jersey had confined their right to know law so that no one out of state could request information. And I realized that was causing trouble for a lot of people, and it was a bit of a controversial issue. And your guest said earlier that the New York Times had asked for records about fracking in particular.
Sure.
And I'm curious whether there's talk of this happening in Pennsylvania, whether there's going to be kind of a confining of this law to kind of discourage the right to know.
Peter, it's a good question.
It's very good question. This law is very broad, and it says that any legal resident of the United States can file a right-to-know request. And that was based primarily on a Third Circuit case out of Delaware that said you cannot restrict right-to-know requests to in-state residents. And a lot of agencies try to restrict it to their own districts. However, Justice Alito on the U.S. Supreme Court just overturned that and took another case related to that and said that states can restrict right-to-know requests to their own commonwealth or their own state. I'll bet you the ink isn't even dry yet on folks that are in the legislature that are going to insert that and have that be part of it. So we just my chief legal counsel, Dina Lefkowitz, just gave me that analysis a couple of days ago, and the law, the current law is it doesn't matter where you live as long as you're a legal resident. However, based on this case, I think we're going to see this law change to say states only.
Peter, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And we're almost out of time here, but you have worked as a journalist. Does that also help as the head of the Office of Open Records?
It does, but what helps more is the fact that I was also a government official in Illinois and worked on campaigns because, when I was a journalist, I used to say, 5 days, what are you doing? Now, on the other side of it, I'm like, seriously? Only 5 days? So my background has really been a nice springboard for all of this work.
Well, Terry Mutchler, thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times. A good education, and she's the executive director of Pennsylvania's Office of Open Records. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. We're open as well. You can check us out on Facebook and Twitter, archives, email, podcasts, Sirius Satellite Radio. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour. Those great questions as well. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.